This is a two-week class, so we're going to spend some time here this morning, and we're going to spend some time here next Sunday morning, and it's not a repeat. So next week, today we're going to deal with technology, how it relates to us, and then next week we're going to deal with how it relates to our kids and grandkids and that kind of stuff. And so you don't really have to be at this one to come in next week. You'll be able to pick up right where we are. But it's not going to be a repeat of next week. I know some of the classes have done that. I just want to make sure that you know that if you want to catch the piece of it related to kids and technology and all that revolves around that, we're going to do that next week. One other thing is that this class is a little bit difficult. I'm usually pretty decent, but a little bit difficult is I looked a couple times. I didn't find anywhere in scripture related to how to use my iPad, and so it makes it a little harder to tie into what Jesus actually thought about technology. But hopefully, we'll be able to do some of that, and maybe just have some pretty practical kind of stuff as we talk through this stuff. I guess we'll get started. Anything else before we begin? I'm not going to teach you today how to use your iPhone. I apologize. If you want to know how to do that, you can hire Michael, and he'll do that.
I need somebody to tell me when it's 9:40 because I have no timepiece on me.
Okay, come on in. I'm gonna make you do the same thing I made everybody else do. You got it. Sam's still got his phone. He can help us out. I made everybody surrender either their phone or their shoe.
Don't have it.
All right, they're off the hook. Mickey's the same way. Mickey didn't have it, so.
Okay.
You have a phone or a shoe? Do you want to surrender? You better give him your shoe.
That's okay, I'm going.
All right, sir. Good morning. My phone's up there. I'm done.
Stay close to my phone.
That's right.
You'll get all of Rachel's Twitter things.
There you go. So let's get started. First thing is, I love technology. I assume Mel's in a similar boat. We love technology. I would guess the reason that we you get to give me your phone or your shoe. That's what I thought. You can't play by the rules. I've asked everybody either surrender a phone or a shoe.
Give me your shoe.
She's not afraid. I'm assuming we were asked to teach this class for the summit. Mostly because of what I do. I'm on a computer all day long. My job entirely revolves around computers and what I do and my clients and that kind of stuff. And when I'm not working, more often than I'd probably like to admit, I'm on some sort of device being connected, whether it's a TV, whether it's an iPad, whether it's my phone, any number of devices. And I would assume that many of you are in the same way. Technology in itself is amazing. Our times are amazing because of it. We have search engine companies who are building driverless cars. We have patents filed for floating trains that drive 700 miles an hour. And I did the research on that. A train that can go from 700 miles an hour can go from LA to San Francisco in 30 minutes. Even your fridge can tell you when your food is bad now or when you need to go to the store and the things you need to buy and that kind of stuff. And so it's a pretty phenomenal thing. And I'm not breaking any news to you, of course. In my lifetime alone, computers have gone from room-sized machines like in here to small monitors and boxes into the corner of our home, somewhere in a room somewhere, all the way down to some of the most powerful... I gotta have my phone, I'm sorry. How about that?
Surrender your shoe.
Surrender my shoe. I'll kick my shoe off. This is going to be awkward walking around one shoe. I'll do both. The machines that we carry in our pocket, these are some of the most powerful devices ever invented. They're more powerful than those room-sized computers were years ago, of course. Interesting stat, 70% of all adults in the U.S. carry a smartphone. If you look over here on the table, I don't see anything but smartphones. Maybe some of you in here have a flip phone still, some of you may not. Just for a second, a moment or two, I want to look at just a quick list of things that this device right here has replaced. I'm sure we could easily add more to this. We look at it, we have newspapers, we have GPS, we have, you know, books and walkie-talkies and music players and cameras and video cameras and all that kind of stuff. So you think about all this, and just in a generation's time. All these devices have been replaced by one little thing right here. I didn't know about this one until about 2 weeks ago. Russell told me that my phone I could use as a level and showed me how to do it. I thought that was kind of interesting. Not only have it replaced dozens of physical devices, it's also changed our vocabulary. It's introduced new words. We think about some of the things that we've changed over the years, words that have new meaning for us, things like surfing and mouse. Okay. When I was in college, I was a grad assistant, taught a computer class, and we had a non-traditional student, and it was her first day in there, first time sitting at a computer, and one of the things I asked them to do is pick up her mouse, and the first thing she did was lift her feet, and she was very concerned that there was something on the floor. And so over time, we don't think about that. The first thing I think of when I think of a mouse now is digital. Browser, what about a wall? Okay. A wall is something completely different now. A screensaver, that never existed prior to computers. Facebook, homepage, laptop, Apple. I got an Apple over here. Okay. The word Apple, completely different now. Come on in. A tweet, birds like to tweet. I like to tweet. Status, okay, that's changed. Even password, that wasn't a word that we used a whole lot. Sorry, it wasn't that good, was it? Technology has changed our world, of course, okay? So much so that I would say that Ryan and I currently work in careers and positions that didn't exist when we were born, and most of our kids probably will do the same. The work that I do has boomed out of technology, and we can only be safe to assume that we'll continue to do that. Over the next couple weeks, we're going to spend a little time determining the changes that technology brought on, if they are a good thing or a bad thing. So a few questions I want to ask to get us started here. What is the technology that has impacted your life the most, you specifically?
Email.
Okay. Technology has an impact on the rest of you.
Just the internet in general, just the connectivity.
Okay. Internet, being able to connect. Okay.
I would say along with that, the access to information. That's the thing with my kids. They ask me a question, and I'm like, let's Google it. And that was just never a concept before. You know, you'd go get the encyclopedia, and it may or may not be there. And
yep.
Just constant access to information.
Or like us, we'd go to the library to get one of the volumes of encyclopedia. Yeah. Like it wasn't even in our house. Okay.
It's funny, what everybody says has been essentially software.
Okay, good.
I'm saying internet, mm-hmm. email, you know, someone like that. I'm thinking hardware. You know,
okay.
It's hard to put your finger on it because it's been so developmental and evolutionary. You know?
Okay.
So I would say portable device to sum things up.
Okay. Okay, good. So there is a differentiator between the software and the hardware, of course, and so some, you know, they are all technology, and some have impacted us in different ways. What about has impacted the world most? What kind of technology would you say may have impacted the world most? I've got a few listed, but I'm going to let you guys start.
I'll probably say texting.
Okay, texting.
Because of the fact is, people really rely on it instead of communicating, especially our teens.
Okay.
My daughter can be in the other room and will text me, "Dad, can I?" I'm like, why don't you speak, you know? So
yeah.
we use that, you know, in place of everything.
I'm a bit grateful that we were supposed to have my father-in-law and his wife here this weekend, and due to just not feeling well, that kind of stuff, they decided to stay home. But they have been at our, I can tell the story why I'm grateful. They have been at our house on more than one occasion where either he or she will be in the back bedroom or the restroom, and they'll be trading texts back and forth. And our house is not that big. Like, this room is about the square footage of our house. And I was like, you could just talk. I was like, it's not that big of a deal. So if they were here, I couldn't have told you that story.
I think talking in the world globally, we've just connected our world globally, so we're more aware of people living in other countries and the different things. I know we've done some Kiva loans with our kids, and my daughter wanted to actually go to Sierra Leone to give them the 25.
That's nice of her.
We had just kind of.
Southwest fly there?
No. Actually, no one flies direct from the United States to Sierra Leone.
Oh, okay.
But that concept of being connected and being able to, like, communicate and interact with people globally.
Okay, so that's one of mine. Is that the internet connect in real time? Okay, to be able to connect each other?
I don't think we've maximized it yet, but I think education is getting somewhere. More people have access to education.
especially in other countries you've never had before.
Good.
They haven't worked out yet, but I think that's going to be something that's going to change the whole world.
Good, for sure. All right, so we have advancement in medicines.
Yeah, I was going to start to say no one had mentioned medicine, and mm-hmm. when you think about all the things that have changed, you go in for major surgery now, come out, you know, with a scar that's kind of stood like this.
And sure. Even you can go in for surgeries that we couldn't fix previously.
Yeah, that you wouldn't come out.
Yeah.
Even to understanding that, you know, being able to see the outbreak of a disease before it really gets out there, you'll Facebook knew about the outbreak of Ebola before.
Okay, so, and with that one, I have one right there, and it probably falls on this. That's the ability to mine big data. Because I think when we can mine big data and we can go through and process thousands and thousands of lines of code, we can find these kinds of things ahead of time. The rise of manufacturing production over the last 120 years or so, I mean, my boys are fully entrenched in how it's made right now. The show how it's made, a factory made, that kind of stuff. If they have any moment of downtime, like, can we turn on YouTube and find clips of how it's made? Like, it's interesting to me, and it makes me dizzy watching those machines just run over and over, but they love it. Maybe not always positive. What about nuclear physics or the atom bomb? And that's technology. I don't know if it was necessarily a super positive, impactful kind of technology, but it has impacted the world. Or the ability to drill a hole into the earth, to pull out this substance called petroleum and refine that into some sort of material that then we can power many, many of our machines with daily, okay? Those kinds of things, those are technologies that we've seen over the last 100 plus years that have changed our world. And one more question, what about the church? Has technology impacted the church in any way? Okay, how?
Call in and listen to sermons or watch sermons online or
okay.
Like that. It's also impacted jobs. There's some new, I don't remember the stat, but there's some new stat about how many jobs will be replaced by robots in the next, you know, 10 or 20 years.
Okay.
And I think surgery's being done, you know, by robots. And so
okay.
It'll impact us economically.
You guys need to become robots. Okay, so it's worldly impact. Okay, with the church, you brought the recording of audio and video. Interesting nugget that I found out a couple weeks ago is that a gentleman, some of you may know this, a gentleman has recently come to our gathering time, our worship time, and talked to Scott a little bit, and he came specifically because he had never really been a church goer, but he came specifically because he got on our website and he watched a couple of Scott's sermons, and it led him to the fact that he's like, I'm going to go check it out. And so he's come just by watching some online sermons and showed up, and otherwise where he may not have ever entered this building at all. What about PowerPoint for, you know, visual learners, those who learn when there's something there, something tangible for them to look at and see, that kind of stuff? The digitization of the Bible. We all carry our Bible on our phone now. Not only is it made a little more accessible to us, we can have it with us at all times, but also it's accessible to more people with disabilities, for vision impaired, for hearing impaired. Those can, you know, those who are vision impaired can listen to the Bible being read to them and that kind of stuff.
I can carry every version of the Bible in my pocket.
You could have
flip over and do the different translations.
Yeah, you could have 100 translations and 100 different variations of it. And so they are quite small when we put them into bits and bytes.
Playing with a Luddite point here, PowerPoint, you mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
However, could it possibly also have a dumbing down effect? People
sure.
expect to be spoon-fed through PowerPoint
sure.
rather than being able to open, you know, either electronically or physically, their Bibles and actually study for themselves.
Sure, yep.
There is a potential negative, I guess.
I hope that by the end of this class you won't have felt like I've spoon-fed you with my PowerPoint, but there's potential. So.
It'd be true for Excel. You know, nobody uses these calculators and sums
exactly.
and all that stuff.
Sure.
We see it when there's a mistake in the song doesn't go to the next page. We're all at it, and yeah.
It works! It's funny, 30 years ago, as a song leader, all I saw was on top of people's heads, and now I see people's faces.
That's right.
You know, it's changed that. So
technology is pretty awesome. It's changed the way we live. And yet, with all of that, why is it that people in the United States are less content than they used to be? Has the advancement of technology played a role in, I'm standing in the way, I'm sorry, decline in contentment in our lives?
Sure.
I see some head nods. Do what?
I see it in my teenager.
Okay, good. Okay? I'd like to spend the next little while today talking about how, while we know that it's great, while it's awesome and all the things we just talked about, it hasn't yet solved every problem, okay? And may have introduced some of its own. So I want to look at some of those just a little bit. In her book called Alone Together, MIT professor and psychologist Sherry Turkle outlines this concept that she calls connected but alone. From her years of research, she has studied people and technology and how they use them to see that, yes, it has connected the world, but it has diminished our ability to communicate with each other, and it's also hindered our ability to have a real conversation. Good morning. Y'all come on in. Okay. Sherry points out that the phones that are in our pocket, I'm going to read this here. So the phones that are in our pocket are machines that offer companionship, and we treasure and we're tempted by that fact. Texting and posting makes us feel like we're in control, but they don't offer a true conversation. On this side, if you guys look over there at that side of the room, okay, can you truthfully say that you know them? Okay, you know their names, you might know what they do, you know their kids and that kind of stuff. But do you guys know what kept them up last night?
If they put it on Facebook.
If they put it on Facebook, man. And likewise, with y'all, if you look over here, do you guys know where their passions lie? Do you know that what they would do tomorrow if money was no object? So I would submit to you, with all this connected technology we have, we've lost this ability to have a deep connection with each other, and we don't know these things about each other. Okay? I know where you are. I know where you've checked in and who you're hanging out with. Okay? And as Denver pointed out, our teens know when they're not around who they want to be with. They are around with other kids, and they want to be a part of that. Sherry points out that we expect more from technology than we do from each other. While it's brilliant and done so many things for relationships, it cannot fill that natural need for connection that we have. It's ingrained in us. I would urge you to do your very best every day to make time to find a way in your families, in your workplace, in your church, with your children to be present, okay? Put it back in your pocket, turn it off, walk away from it, and be present for a little while, and work to establish a deeper connection. Okay, be present in the lives of those who are around you. Continuing on the thought of being alone that Sherry kind of built upon, I want to talk about the fact that technology has also impeded our ability to actually be comfortable with solitude. When I was a kid, I got bored, and I didn't have a phone to solve that, and that's okay that I got bored. What do we see most often, and quite frankly, what do we do most often when our kids come to us and tell us they're bored?
We stick what you're looking for.
More often than not, we stick a phone in their hand, or a remote in their hand, or something like that, and we find ways to occupy them. Being bored is okay, and in fact, science has proven recently that being bored is actually a good thing. Boredom in both children and adults helps to increase creativity in the brain, and it also encourages the pursuit of new goals. I know sometimes when I'm driving from here to West Texas or to Eastern New Mexico, it's flat and it's boring and that kind of stuff, and the boys, of course, are plugged in with their headphones watching a movie on the DVD players and that kind of stuff, and I'm not talking and my wife is mad at me, and it's not because I'm upset. It's not because I'm upset or I don't want to talk, but I've gotten a little bored in my brain, and that's sometimes when I have the best thinking around work, around the things I should be doing better, the more creative things that I'd like to be working on and that kind of stuff. Boredom is okay, and it's actually good for us. It's not just our kids, though. What happens when we get bored, okay? You're in the line at the grocery store. You're filling up with gas. Heaven forbid you have to go through the pickup line at your kid's elementary school, which is the god-awfulest worst place on the planet. We pull out our phones, okay? We look at them.
I think we also pull them out to make ourselves feel important. Like, if we're standing in the hallway and these other pods of people are all talking, and we feel like, anybody's talking to me, oh, well, let me pull my phone out and I'll start talking.
Oh, okay. So you'd use it as a distraction, okay? This morning, I took most of your phones up, and I asked you a question. Be honest now, if by this time, we're 15, 20 minutes or so, how many of us, by show of hands, because my hand is up, how many of us, by show of hands, quite think you might have already looked at something else on her phone besides her Bible. You might have checked email, you might have hit Facebook, you might have, you know, could have been anything. Text a message, check your calendar, that kind of stuff. It's a distraction force. It helps us to break free from that solitude. What do our kids see when we do that and we show our disinterest? And what are they going to do when they're found in a similar situation?
Since I don't have a computer, don't have a kid, if I was a kid, I'd see a parent saying, "You don't love me, you're not interested in what I'm doing," and that would then turn me to be, I hope, not be a lone wolf.
Okay, good.
When kids are turned to a lone wolf, they attack.
Okay, good. Okay. When I take my boys outside to go ride their bikes up in front of the house and stuff, am I truly there in the moment watching them do their jumps and their skids and all that kind of stuff? Or am I kind of kicked over on the curb hoping they don't notice that I'm flipping through emails, maybe responding to one or two, that kind of stuff? Because I'm pretty sure they notice. I'm pretty sure they're aware, and I'm pretty sure they're going to mimic the habits that I do. Not just the fact that our kids see that, but the evidence of solitude is important. We see in Scripture. We see Moses take time to go be with God. He spent at least 40 days. We see Elijah spend time in solitude with God. We see Jacob do it. We see Jesus do it on a number of occasions. We see it when he's in mourning. We see it when he's in distress in Gethsemane. We see it when he's about to go and choose the apostles. We see it in a number of different places. Solitude by yourself or with God is extremely important. But we don't have time, right? We don't have time for solitude. We're busy. Our lives are busy. If our lives are busy, then why do we average 3 hours a day on our phones? Because I don't think that it's not that we're busy. I think it's because solitude is hard.
Somebody here just texted.
Okay. All right. Solitude allows those minds to wander. Okay? It allows us to often go to places where we aren't always comfortable being. Memories that might hurt, thoughts about things that need to get done, and that kind of stuff. Comedian Louis C.K., you guys know him?
No.
Good. Don't watch it. Has a couple of pretty insightful clips that were a little more colorful than I was comfortable showing this morning. But one of them, he is sitting down on Conan O'Brien's couch, and he's talking to Conan. Conan's asking him, "Louis, why don't you buy your daughter, your teenage daughter, a cell phone?" And so Louis kind of goes on this rant, and then he gets into this topic of kind of this idea of solitude. I thought it was kind of impressive, kind of insightful for just, you know, a comedian. They're not insightful people, right? He said one day he was driving down the highway, and a song comes on the radio. Have you seen this? I see you kind of smile. You just know Louis C.K.? Okay, he's driving down the highway, and he's listening to a song, and a song comes on the radio, and it's Bruce Springsteen, and it's, you know, he goes through this whole being funny, I'm not going to sing it for you kind of stuff, but he'll do that. But it's a song that actually was kind of touching to him and brought back some memories that actually kind of hurt. And so he said he's cruising along, and do what a lot of us often do is he didn't really want to get into that. He said my stomach kind of started feeling it and stuff. He said, so instead I just grabbed my phone and I picked it up. He said, and I was about to just pick up and just start texting about 50 people the word hi, just so I didn't have to think about this, because they'll start responding to me and I'll feel better about it. And he said about that time, you know, like we do, which we're not supposed to do, pick up our phone in our car and that kind of stuff. He said, I stopped and I looked at it and I decided no. And he said, I put my phone back down, and I turned the radio up a little bit higher, and I drove a little farther until I couldn't take it anymore, and I pulled off on the side of the road and I bawled like a baby. So then I sat there and I cried and I lived within the moment until my body's natural antibodies kicked in and calmed me down and made me feel better and did what they're supposed to do. And I think it's important that we are able to sometimes go through that process of, yeah, it's uncomfortable sometimes when we're alone. And yes, it's uncomfortable sometimes when we have those thoughts that the things we don't want to think about. But God created us to go through those moments and to learn from them as well. To be alone is a learned practice. It's not easy to any of us. To sit and to focus either internally on yourself, on what you need to be working on, or focus your mindset around God through meditation, through prayer, that kind of stuff, It is important. It's a learned practice. It's a discipline. Technology has made it harder and will continue to do so for us to allow ourselves to be alone, to have solitude. I would encourage you to make room for solitude in your life. Okay? Make deeper connections, of course, but make room for solitude as well. Find ways to demonstrate it to your kids. Create sacred spaces at home and at work and that kind of stuff. One of the things that this study has kind of helped me to think about is I may implement a game at work. What I've seen is we go to lunch pretty regularly, either just us or with clients or coworkers, that kind of stuff. And some of you might have seen this, where you walk in and you surrender your phone. And you put it on the table face down. And everybody has their phone down. You can stack them up. You can do whatever with them. And if it goes off, which it will, okay, the first person to pick that phone up buys lunch. Okay? Seems simple enough. Okay? Mine's going to go off. Ryan's going to go off. It might be for the same reason. But if we don't pick it up, we can enjoy that deeper connection, and we can also enjoy a little bit of that time of solitude where we don't have to be distracted by it, and we also don't have to pay the bill, okay? Ends up that I'll end up getting it anyways. I'm sure nobody picks up their phone, so.
Hey, Christian.
Sir.
I was listening the other day on this stuff I've been listening to. I had a pretty good concept in there. It says, you know, when you think about how do you show somebody you love them? What do you do?
Okay.
How do they know they love you? You know, whether it be you tell them, you touch them, you know, you speak to them, you give them just good words. And then he goes, so how many times do you do that to yourself? You know, when you think about it, oftentimes, you never really tell yourself you love yourself.
I like that.
You know, it seems weird to do that. Or you never really touch yourself. Or you never really give yourself, you know, that real intimate love that you want to give other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something I got to be careful of. If you really love somebody, you got to love yourself first. You know, not in a way that's ego-driven, but it's humble-driven. I thought that was a good thought to think about.
I do like that. Thank you. That is something that we should consider. This is completely off-topic, and I don't know that it totally fits. It wasn't in my notes for sure. In the mornings, one of the things I've always struggled with is positivity and necessarily always being a positive person. Some research I've done into some of it, and I continue to do because I truly do want to be a person that's not just a negative human being, is daily affirmation kind of stuff, is working on myself, is forcing myself just to smile, because the act of forcing myself to smile actually creates a natural occurrence in my body of making myself happier and that kind of stuff. So even my wife has noticed that there will be mornings where I stand in the shower for 2 minutes and I force myself to smile. And I stand with a little bit more poise, or I might stand like this with my hands up in the air celebrating something, because that actually creates a natural lift inside of you. And I think that follows along kind of dovetails what you're saying is take time for ourselves. Take time to focus on yourself, to get yourself right. Take time to get yourself right with God, and then some of these other things are going to fall into place. And you're going to be able to affirm other people when you can affirm yourself.
And to that, there's more research that says if you're looking at what you want or want to be, like dream boards or affirmations, that your body and your mind will chase those things versus staying stuck in that negativity and becoming a victim. So it's kind of how you transport from victim to victory.
I think there's some scripture.
Yeah. All I heard is Dimmer's willing to make all of you a dream board out of that. Okay, let's keep going because we're going to run out of time. In the fact that technology has hindered our ability to connect deeply with others, we've seen that the fact that we've hindered our opportunities and allowed us to not be at peace with ourselves and spend time with ourselves. It's also proving itself a pretty hard thing to quit. Anybody know what dopamine is? You can't raise your hand. Anybody know what dopamine is?
Happiness.
Right? Happiness, something in your body?
Chemical reaction in the body.
There you go.
To a stimulus.
Okay, there you go. Dopamine, I'm going to get a little science-y on you for a second, sorry. Dopamine is the neurotransmitters in your brain that are most associated with pleasure. It gets released when it wants to reward your body for vital activities. Marking something off of a to-do list releases a small amount of dopamine in your brain. And some of those who are to-do list type people, you understand that small moment of pleasure you get out of that. It's the same you get with eating. It's released when you have sex. All those types of things in your body release dopamine and often change your mood for the better. Studies have shown that the very same dopamine that you get when you eat something like a chocolate bar or you mark something on the list, you get from social media interaction. Whether you're posting a selfie, whether you're tweeting about your pumpkin spice latte, or you're posting a prayer request on Facebook. I try to go PSL, but I don't think many of you would get that one. So you are posting a prayer request on Facebook. That dopamine is actually proven to be released in your body at that moment in time. The same with whether you retweet a link. Share a status with somebody or have a conversation with somebody, whether you know them or not. For some of you, that's probably a little harder than for others.
That wasn't me.
How hard is it to some of you knowing that your phone is going off over there and you're 20 feet away from it? Okay? Some of you it is, because you want to know who it is. And you want to know what it's about because it's important to you. And it's connected. And you know, like a drug, your body craves that dopamine. It's got to have a fix. And right now, some of you are thinking, I need a note. Okay? I see lights flashing over there. Some of you have messages, okay? It's difficult, okay? Not only the fact that I know it, technology companies know it. Okay? Tech companies and marketers are working, basing their work on decades of neuroscience research to make their products more as addictive, more addictive and profitable as possible. Companies like Facebook and Google have entire departments, often hundreds of employees, dedicated to what they call engagement. Engagement is the practice of finding ways to keep you on their site longer or to have you coming back more often. It's often said that engagement is the currency of Facebook. The more time you spend in looking at your phone, the more money they make. It's as simple as that. That is a scary thought, since this little gem went around this week blowing up the internet. Okay. Sadly, it's not just Facebook that wants you to be on more on their site. It's everywhere. If I took my phone and go outside and I Google Home Depot, so I can put, right, I put in Google Maps Home Depot where I want to go. Okay, I'm going to go to Home Depot. I'm going to get what I need. I'm going to go home. If at that moment I pull up my computer, more likely than not, one of the millions of sites that I visit any day or time that have an ad on there, all the way from little blogs all the way to Amazon, I'm going to see an ad, a coupon, a product, something related to Home Depot. They're tracking you, and there's a term for it. It's called remarketing, okay? They track me from my phone to the store to my computer, and they know that I have something, some kind of need. I'm doing a project. I'm doing something related to what's going on, and they can do that. That's what engagement is about. Video game developers are not alone in this. They understand this concept. The more engaged you are at the game, the more time you'll spend, the more money you'll spend. So much so that they have rooms of people filled who sit and watch you while you play on the other side. And the system is smart enough to know that if you're doing too good and it's too easy, they're going to throw some curveballs at you while you're playing the game to slow it down a little bit. And if it's too hard, you're getting stuck on a level over and over, they might throw you a bone and give you a little tool or a toy or a bomb or something to blow up to get past that level. Because they know that if it's too easy or if it's too hard, you'll quit. Okay, but then you know if the game knows that you'll stay on there, that it'll continue on there and you'll pay more money and they'll help you out right at the right time that you're struggling. Candy Crush and Words with Friends. Candy Crush and Words with Friends, they didn't get lucky. Okay. It wasn't just that you just stumbled across Candy Crush and it just happened to be a fun game and you spent a whole lot of money. You spent heap loads of money, okay? And they spent heap loads of money finding ways to hook you, to keep you, and to drain more out of you, okay? That's engagement, and that's what our phones and our devices are doing to us. Anybody ready to admit that maybe we might have a slight bit of a technology addiction? Not yet. Okay. Sure. You can walk away at any time. Maybe some things we think about. What about a tech detox? Some of the ladies did the 7 series and they did a week-long fast, I think is what it was, of technology, and it's hard. My wife, she was like, we're going to do this together. I was like, no, we're not. So I didn't do it. I couldn't do it. We wouldn't. But
I got the same response.
Yeah. sure it is totally stupid, but I'm not sure I'm ready to do it. Some kind of a detox, some kind of a way to walk away from it. Maybe you get crazy and you close that social network altogether. I don't know. It's happened. There's a segment in the tech world right now who actually are realizing some of this and trying to counter the effects of what's going on. There's an app out there called Moment that you can download, and Moment actually tracks how often you pick up your phone and use it, whether you're checking time, you're checking the weather, you're doing anything. And they say, on average, most new users, when they sign up, realize that they check their phone on average between 50 and 100 times a day. So throughout your day, you're grabbing your phone and going through it that many times. One of the things I did almost a year ago that has honestly been a great resolve to me, and it's one of the simplest things you can do, I turned off push notifications. Okay? My phone no longer goes out and pushes to me when I get new email, that kind of stuff. It still is going to push when I get a text message or those kinds of things, but email specifically, I could be sitting on the couch previously and hear my phone go off and get up and walk over and check and find out it was just spam, I didn't need it, and I go sit down. And 5 minutes later, it would ring again because I got another email. So I'd get up and I'd go over to the counter and I'd check it. And that created a stress in my life because oftentimes I would go check it because I would think, that's a client, and a client, something's broken, or a client needs something, I've got to fix it. And instead, what I did is I realized that there wasn't a client most of the time. And even if it was, most of my clients are cool with it. And if there was an emergency, they're not going to email me. So I turned off push notifications. I'd encourage you, maybe spend a week trying it out. It's hard the first few days, I'll give you that. But after a while, I can get up every couple of hours now, or when I walk by when I'm doing something, then I can check it and I can see, you know what? It wasn't as important. Last thing I want to talk about here is one of the biggest problems with technology out there, and we got to wrap this up. My wife is telling me, hurry. Yeah, it is, and we're going to miss a whole bunch of this content. The content we consume changes, it shapes our contentment and our day-to-day living. We are what we eat. What kind of content do you consume? Surveys show that nearly 70% of men and 30% of women view pornographic-related content on a monthly basis. And the stats aren't that far off for those who identify themselves as Christians. In other surveys, pastors have been shown to be up to 50%. Next week, we're going to look how this has permeated all the way down to our children. What kind of content do you consume? This industry is so large that it's estimated the yearly revenue total is greater than the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, and the National Hockey League combined. Nobody knows for sure, but most people estimate that it's a $20 billion a year plus industry. I don't feel like I need to tell you that I need to go into a whole lot of detail of the effects of the kind of content like this that we consume, how it affects us, but it truly does. Studies show it affects individuals, it affects families, it affects society, and it affects the church. 55% of divorce cases, 56% of divorce cases, cite that one or more of the parties involved were addicted to pornography at the time of the divorce. The fact of the matter is not hard to assume that in this room, there are 3 to 5 of us struggling with it right now. And there are probably that many more, at least, who have struggled with it in the past. I'm not going to deny that I've struggled with it in the past. Okay? It is out there, it is dangerous, and the most consumed content on a mobile device is pornography. The content we consume, it will consume us. Okay. Technology is a phenomenal thing. It has made so many advancements in this world. The things that it hadn't done yet, it hadn't cured human evil, and it hadn't cured injustices, and I hope that we will continue to work with it to figure out how to do some of those things better, to figure out ways to not be involved in this kind of stuff, to figure out ways to make this kind of stuff go away. But this kind of stuff exists, I believe, all too often because we are not in touch and in tune with our Creator. And when we become in touch and in tune with our Creator, and we make every effort to get everybody else involved and in touch and in tune with our Creator, then this kind of stuff becomes a lot less of a deal that we have to face and be challenged by. Okay? We skip that last page. I want to close this out in prayer, and then I would invite you back next week as we talk about our kids and how some of this affects our kids and some other things, and hopefully be a little bit more positive and a better spin on this. I know today there's some doom and gloom in this, so I don't want you to think that technology is bad, because it's not. There are many great things that come across. But let's pray, and I'm going to dismiss this.